This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzel with Adam Casey, who, with his colleague Seva Gornitsky, published The Bully in the Bubble, an essay in Foreign Affairs about Vladimir Putin and how he has evolved over these years of his long reign as a personalist leader, a man who gathers power around him through national security agents, the SVR, the FSB, the FO, the FSO, the defense ministry, all of that. And we come now to the conflict in Ukraine, or the potential conflict in Ukraine. So the puzzle, these national security figures, are they cautious also? Are they cautious like Vladimir Putin? Because you note in your essay that that is not typical of personalist leaders. They tend to be reckless and aggressive. And yet they're holding back, they're holding back. Vladimir Putin sitting at a 20-foot long table with the president of France. Vladimir Putin taking phone calls from the new chancellor of Germany. All of his agents, especially Sergei Lavrov, spending time flying back and forth across Europe. Is that representation of a personalist leader or some other version, Adam?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think, so first of all, you know, most accounts of kind of Russian domestic politics suggest that the foreign ministry is, you know, maybe not a particularly important decision maker in Russian foreign policy, and that in fact is kind of Putin and his inner circle which are making most of these decisions. That being said, you know, so we don't know what Russia is going to do in Ukraine. It sounds like from sort of what we've been able to see, they're giving themselves a lot of different options, including a large-scale invasion and occupation is the kind of most extreme, but that certainly doesn't mean that is exactly what they're going to do. The danger with this type of regime is that Putin may be badly underestimating the costs of this kind of invasion because he's not getting kind of alternative analysis filtered it through his inner circle. So it isn't necessarily, I don't think, that the Siloviki, the kind of inner circle in Putin's Russia, are, you know, necessarily more aggressive. That being said, some of their public comments have been quite hawkish. Patrushev said in 2015, for example, that the U.S. would much rather Russia didn't exist at all as a country. Naryshkin, the head of Russia's foreign intelligence, compared the current government in Ukraine to the one under Nazi occupation in World War II. And Sergei Shoigu, the Minister of Defense, called Ukrainian nationalists recently non-humans. So, I mean, there is some, you know, fairly aggressive rhetoric coming out of kind of Putin's inner circle. That being said, I don't know that, you know, they're necessarily more likely to launch an invasion.
Recently, I had a conversation with Mikhail Bernstam of the Hoover Institution, born Russian, now an American citizen and an economist. And we talked about the Russian Central Bank. And it was revealed to me, the Financial Times had reported recently that Russia, the Kremlin, has built up a large foreign reserves, more than $600 billion, I believed, and that that was possible that they could weather sanctions. I note that the price of oil is said by Bloomberg in these last days to have given a bounty to Russia, perhaps in the nature of $65 billion extra because of the price of oil. But what I learned from Mikhail Bernstam is that the ruble will collapse, the banks will collapse, the economy will collapse immediately, that the banking digital system that provides security for those foreign reserves will go away. They'll have gold they can't sell. And in other words, an economic disaster. So I asked Mikhail, does Putin know this? Is there a central banker who can speak to him and has his ear? What I'm learning from you is probably not. Is that fair, Adam? He's not had that conversation.
Yeah, so the one I would add kind of two caveats to that. So the first is that, you know, those are potential sanctions that have been mentioned. It's not exactly clear how the United States is going to respond to various types of interventions by the Russians in Ukraine. One is this thing you mentioned, cutting off SWIFT, sort of access to SWIFT payments, and, you know, more or less cutting Russian banks out of the global financial system, which, yeah, it could obviously be, you know, quite economically devastating. And the second thing is that, you know, Putin does have a kind of series of technocrats around him that he kind of tasks with keeping the economy running. So I don't know that, you know, if this decision is made, it would be necessarily because Putin has no idea that this will be disastrous for the economy. It's more that he thinks it's, you know, kind of worth that cost, if that is indeed something the Russians do, you know, the Russian government does.
All right, let's go to worth the cost. I'm told by colleagues that there are genuine Russian concerns, security concerns around the breadth of the country. The near abroad, as it's called in the famous Russian novels, the near abroad. And that I'm told also these are comparable to America's built-in national security concerns about the Gulf of Mexico or about Alaska, about anybody who comes close to our coastline. These Siloviki, who advise the president, that would give them some legitimacy. I note especially the defense minister. Do we believe that Mr. Putin understands if he conveys those national security concerns that he will get a hearing in the West? Does he understand that we can have this conversation without violence?
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, no indication yet that that's not Putin's plan, right? I think we don't know that, you know, as of now, I think it's perfectly possible to interpret Russian moves vis-a-vis Ukraine as Putin trying to get security guarantees out of the West that he may or may not achieve. And if he achieves less than what he wants, which he's asking for quite a lot, I think is extremely unlikely to be agreed to, that he may still consider a partial victory. So, I mean, nothing is preordained at this point. We don't know necessarily that the Russians are going to go to war. And I would just add on that, you know, the area in which Putin himself, you know, perhaps matters less, I think it's likely that if another Russian, you know, let's say Medvedev had somehow consolidated power at Putin's expense and he ruled Russia today, I think he would also not want Ukraine to join NATO. I think this is a relatively common Russian position. In fact, Yeltsin, who had good relations with the West also, or mostly good relations with the West, also didn't want Ukraine to join NATO. So I don't know that, you know, Russian opposition to Ukraine joining NATO is particularly unique to Putin. That being said, to understand what the Russians are going to do about this, we do need to understand Putin.
Looking to the future, Adam, because you work on this as a professional, my reading, and I read history, I'm not a historian, I'm an amateur reader. My reading of regimes that resemble Mr. Putin's, the one he's assembled now, surrounded by his lieutenants, is that succession is the profound weakness. Do you see any evidence that any of these men in the Siloviki are possible successors? You mentioned Mr. Medvedev, although he doesn't look like a member of the inner circle now. Does Putin think about succession? He's not a young man.
It's a great question. I think absolutely this is a massive problem for the regime. This is a massive problem for personalized autocracies in general. Putin recently looked at the action. I think a lot of people thought that Putin was watching what happened in Kazakhstan under Nursultan Nazarbayev, who sort of attempted to step down without giving up all of his formal powers and has now seen most of those stripped away in the events in the last couple of months. I think he sees that and thinks that, you know, means it's much less likely for him to be able to pull off something the same. So yes, I think, you know, the kind of two names that are floated as a potential successor, but obviously we don't know. Naryshkin is sometimes talked about as a successor. So he, again, is the head of the SVR, the Russian Foreign Intelligence Agency, was former KGB alongside Putin.
We have 30 seconds, Adam. Go ahead. Who's the second?
Yeah, and then there's the very last one. Shoigu is occasionally mentioned as a potential successor. But yeah, so two of these inner circle members are occasionally mentioned. That being said, appointing a successor of any kind is tremendously difficult in these kind of regimes.
Adam Casey, with his colleague Seva Grunitsky, publishing and Foreign Affairs magazine, The Bully in the Bubble. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.